Hello, and welcome to the Business Decisions Podcast. My name is Stuart Wood. I'm the CEO of Caravel Law and your host for this podcast about issues at the intersection of business and law. Today, I'm joined by one of the members of the team at Caravel Law, Monica Goyle, our Director of Legal Innovation. Caravel Law is an innovative Canadian law firm that provides flexible and affordable legal services to businesses of all sizes, and Monica has played a key role in building Caravel's reputation for legal innovation. She's a leading thinker in this space and is a sought-after writer and speaker on these topics. Now, Monica has an unusual background for a lawyer. She has a Bachelor of Applied Science from the University of Waterloo, as well as a Master of Science in Electrical Engineering from Stanford University. She began her career working for major telecom companies such as Toshiba, Nokia, and Nortel before earning her law degree from the University of Toronto Faculty of Law. Monica is not just a lawyer, but also an entrepreneur and an educator, and her career history demonstrates that she has a passion for developing and implementing legal technology solutions that improve access to justice, efficiency, and quality of legal services. She has co-founded and advised several legal startups, such as Alluvian Law and My Legal Briefcase, and she teaches courses on legal innovation and entrepreneurship at Osgoode Hall Law School and Toronto Metropolitan University, as well as the Institute for Future of Law Practice. She has been named one of the top 10 women to watch in tech in the Journal of the American Bar Association, and since she is such in high demand as a speaker, I thought it would be great to have her on the podcast to share her thoughts with our audience here. So Monica, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So Monica, your interest in legal technology started very early in your career. What drove that interest and made this the focus of your work?
When I went to law school, because I thought I'd be working in, or I was you know, motivated or inspired by, you know, human rights issues, civil rights issues and stuff like that. And when I started to practice, what I realized, or what I saw as an issue, was the kind of lack of use of technology in the kind of in the practice of law. And I saw that a better use of technology could potentially lead to more access to justice, more affordability of services. So that's what got me really interested in legal technology, was thinking about how it could change legal services.
Well, you were ahead of the game, as a lot of law societies are now creating these innovation sandboxes with the goal of using technology to expand access to justice.
That's right. Yeah, there's one in Ontario, there's one in Alberta and British Columbia, several in the US with this exact goal.
And there's a number of legal tech companies in Canada. Why do you think this has become a bit of a hub or an area of focus?
It's a good question. I mean, I think there's a few drivers. One, we've had a few very successful companies here. I think that's helped to create a ecosystem. So there's Clio. There was Akira Systems that's now been purchased by Latera. Thomson Reuters is headquartered here. So I think there's this history of kind of legal tech. And then there's these incubators. So there's the Legal Innovation Zone in Ryerson that's helping to incubate some of these startups. So I think that really helps. So it's a whole ecosystem, and it's interesting phenomena.
Have you been impressed with the companies coming out of the Legal Innovation Zone?
Yeah, I mean, some of them we have actually collaborated and we worked with at Caravel. So one of the companies that we're currently, we use their services is a company called Rally. And they create this tool called Spellbook. And Spellbook is really neat. It's built on GPT, which is the same technology as ChatGPT. And it allows lawyers to review a contract. So it's a contract review feature. And it also has some ability to do like clause language kind of generation. So it's a very, very interesting tool. And this particular area is very interesting, the generative AI. So there's a number of tools that we're using that have come out of there. Yeah.
And do you find that the founders of legal tech companies are actually lawyers, or are they tech entrepreneurs with an interest in law?
Well, I see both. So I see a lot of them as having one founder, at least, who's a lawyer, and then one founder who's like maybe a tech person. I think that's actually where I see the most success, is where there's at least one person on the team that's a lawyer. But I've seen other people who are just like frustrated with, you know, accessing legal services and decided that they're going to start a company to address that.
So now you, it sounds like you picked up on your interest in legal tech right in law school. And now, full circle, you're back in law school teaching students about legal technology. So what kind of things are students most interested in your classes these days?
The students are really interested in the AI technology. So this fall, I'm going to be teaching an AI and data course. I'm really interested to see how AI could be used in the practice of law, like especially the generative AI, which is generating text, which has a lot of applications in the legal space. And the law students, I think, have that same kind of like, they see the tech. I think they're more, they've grown up with it. They're more aware of the potential of the technology and how it could be potentially used in the practice of law, how it could also potentially disrupt the practice of law. So I think they're very engaged around those issues.
And are they more aware and have expectations of the role that legal tech is going to play over the course of their careers?
It varies. So there's a group cohort of students who come in and who are really engaged. They have previous knowledge. They're really thinking about how technology can impact the profession. But then there's a cohort of students who are, you know, I'm here for, you know, to become a lawyer, and they haven't actually thought about these issues. And when they start thinking about it, you know, it interests them, it engages them. And there's a lot of just really kind of interesting issues around the technology, like, for example, AI and the legal implications of that technology.
And do you see entrepreneurial spirit in these law students?
Yes, absolutely. And I wonder what they're going to do. Like some of the students, like last year, I taught a course which was law and technology, and the students had to come up with a idea, like, you know, a problem that they identified around the access of legal services, and then they had to come up with a solution, a tech solution to that problem. And the presentations and the project submissions were just fantastic. They were just amazing. I was blown out of the water. Just the ideas that they came up with and how they thought about, you know, tackling them. So hopefully we'll see some future entrepreneurs from those students.
And do you see anybody coming up with new legal tech companies that do not involve AI?
Yeah, more and more, it seems to be the focus of just tech in general. It seems to be focused around AI. But there are companies that are, for example, blockchain focused, or document automation is still very a very good kind of use case in legal. So we're still seeing that in legal. And there's problems that come up. So like for right now, there's like a digital ID verification. How can we, in a smart way, identify clients' ID electronically? And so there's a number of solutions around that. So yeah, it's not only AI, but it's increasingly becoming that.
Well, AI is certainly dominating the news coverage. What's particularly exciting about these new AI companies that are coming up in legal?
Well, one of the things that, so we've been trialing at the firm software called Harvey. And Harvey is built on the GPT technology as well, as similar to Spellbook, except that technology, what it can do is you can upload a contract, for example, you can upload an email from a client, let's say, and you can ask it to generate a response email to the client. And it does a really good job at generating that kind of, I call it the, you know, the blank page syndrome, like that first draft of a document. And that gets a lawyer partway through, because like sometimes you look at a piece of paper, or, you know, you look at your screen and you're like, where do I start? And so this is potentially giving people a starting point. So it's going to accelerate the time it takes to do work, and potentially lead to kind of cost savings for clients as well.
I know Caravel, we were one of the first firms to be able to work with Harvey starting late in 2022. Have you noticed a big change in the tool and what it can do over the course of, you know, the last year?
Huge change. So first change is like, because the GPT technology improved from 3.5 to 4.0. So we saw a big change when they shifted to the 4.0. Then also they seem like they just keep iterating. I want to believe, but I mean, looking at some of the new additions, it seems that they've taken some of the feedback that we've provided and incorporated that on some of the new features that they've introduced to their product. And those are all like huge changes. So yeah, I've seen a big evolution. And what is interesting, it's not just Harvey, but even Spellbook, just huge changes within the time period of like 6-8 months. Just huge changes. So the technology is changing rapidly, and these companies are rapidly innovating too.
Now, lawyers sometimes have a reputation for being a little resistant to change, and in particular to technology. What's been the reaction from the lawyers at Caravel to these new tools like Harvey and Spellbook?
Well, it was really interesting, because sometimes I'll put out a request and I'll say, hey, who would like to work with me on a pilot program? And I get like a handful of people who raise their hand. With Harvey and Spellbook, we had so many lawyers who were just captivated, I think, by the potential of like the ChatGPT, and they wanted to try it out. The reaction of the lawyers after using the technology has been very positive as well. They have really embraced it. Some have indicated that it has really helped them in their practice. So we've had some really good feedback.
And how do you and those lawyers go about measuring the effectiveness of this technology and sort of separating out what actually will have an impact in the delivery of services to clients versus just very cool and exciting tech that has a bit of a wow factor to it?
Right. I mean, I think that all of the tools that I've mentioned is tools that the lawyers are using and incorporating into their practice. And I think that if it didn't, then they wouldn't embrace it in the way that they have. But in terms of evaluating a tool, you know, there's a couple of things that I look at. One, I'm looking to see, especially with AI, I'm looking to see how is it doing with respect to Canadian law. Oftentimes, the training materials for the AI will be US-centric or UK-centric. So we have to really look and see, you know, is the results applicable in the Canadian context? So that's one thing that I'm looking at. The second thing I'm looking at is that I still do some legal work. It's a small portion of what I do, but I do some legal work. And so I can measure, okay, hey, this is how long something used to take me. And now when I use this particular tool, I'm able to do this faster, or I'm able to do this better. So I have that ability to gauge. And similarly with the lawyers, what I'm looking for from them is, what are the types of use cases? How are they using the tools? Because sometimes they use it in a way I didn't even think about. And then sometimes I'm looking at asking them, how long does it take you to do something? So we used Harvey for a translation of a document, just to see how long it would take a lawyer to take an output from Harvey, you know, that did that first pass, that first translation pass. And what we found was that it reduced the amount of time, the lawyer time, by almost half. So, you know, those are the metrics or things that I would be looking at.
And there was a relatively high profile incident where a lawyer used ChatGPT with the unfortunate results of invented case law. Have those types of examples slowed down the adoption of this technology, you think?
That's a great question. I do think that it's created some pause in the legal sector. I mean, like you said earlier, you talked about how lawyers can be resistant to the adoption of new technology, which is very much the case. And once you have something like that happen, where somebody used a technology and it just had such a public and negative kind of impact, it makes people think twice and it does slow down things. Although I think that the market is starting to become like there's two tiers of law firms. There's law firms that are on the cutting edge who are really looking at technology use, and I don't think they're slowing down. So the generative AI, they're thinking about how they can adopt it within the firm, like our firm, and they're thinking about how they can do it in a measured and a well-defined way, you know, thinking about the risks, as opposed to saying, no, we're not going to use that technology. And then I think there's the group of law firms who are kind of lagging behind, and they will continue to be kind of laggards with respect to the adoption of these techs.
So we've been talking mostly about firms and how they use these tools. What about in-house counsel? What kind of questions do they have about these tools, and how are you seeing them look at these, look at the potential here?
Yeah, I mean, what's really fascinating about in-house law departments is that even predating to generative AI, there's been this creation of this new role, legal operations role. And the legal operations person has really been looking at technology. So the function of the legal operations person in the law departments is to look at technology, look at process, and think about how they could be doing differently, things differently. And so there is a lot of opportunity for them to operationalize like some of the efficiencies in their departments with the use of AI. I see a ton of new technology every day that has very interesting applications in the in-house counsel, in-house law department context.
Well, given the constraints that in-house legal teams are often operating under in terms of headcount and budget, how is a general counsel supposed to keep on top of the number of different companies that are emerging, as you say, daily?
Yeah. I mean, for example, one thing that we're offering to our clients is some consulting so they can have an opportunity to speak with me. And there are other people like me who have looked at the different technologies, and they can look to those people to help them assess and think about the adoption of technology within their law departments. I mean, I see a lot of times people kind of trying to search it online. I think there are some challenges to doing that. When we think about implementing technology, you know, we go through different phases. You know, we do like a pilot. We really think about how we're going to implement the technology. What's the use case? And I think there is a lot of stories of in-house counsel departments not necessarily getting implementation well. And I think that's because they're trying to do a lot of different things. So I think having a third party can help. Then there's a really good resource too called the Legal Tech Hub. They've evaluated a number of different technologies. That can be a really good resource. And then CLOCK, which is the Legal Operations Consortium, they have a lot of different resources for in-house counsel, and that can be an excellent resource for in-house counsel.
So in terms of both firm lawyers and also in-house counsel, what are some of the new skills or competencies you think that lawyers are going to need going forward?
Well, there's going to, you know, people have been talking about this kind of risk that if you use an AI tool and the answer and the response is so good that you just kind of rely on it, you know, that you can start to get potentially just kind of reliant or, you know, not kind of doing your due diligence with respect to looking at the outputs. So I think one of the things that lawyers need to be thinking about is making sure that the output is correct. And so it's counterintuitive because it's like, well, this is something that's supposed to be speeding up my work, but you can't basically just leave it all to the machine. You still have a duty to make sure that the output is verified and is correct. So I think there's going to be some kind of education that we're going to have to do about how do they work? How do we use them? How do we think about the potential risks of them? And implementation.
Do you think you'll be teaching legal prompt drafting in one of these law schools one of these days?
Well, I've been thinking about it. It's actually an art. It's an art to like come up with the prompts. So we have this project that we're working on internally. And we've been experimenting with a couple of tools where you can create your own models. And one of the tools that I've looked at, it is creating the model that you could feed into or you could input into the OpenAI GPT model. And so you have to, in doing that, you have to come up with the prompts. So you come up with prompts and then you then say, based on those prompts, these are potential answers for those prompts, right? And then you're training the system accordingly. So how you word those prompts are really important in terms of training the model, in terms of getting the right output from the models.
And where do you see things going in the near future with these new legal tech options?
I think there's going to be a lot more. We're seeing a lot of investment in generative AI. So I think we're going to see a lot more tools, new tools that are built on the GPT or other large language models. And I think we're going to see more legal tech. We're going to see potentially a surge in new legal tech as people think about how are they going to incorporate these new models in the practice of law.
One of the things that we have seen in the past is people taking a DIY approach to their legal work, doing their own research, using Google to find things and then to avoid the cost of legal. Do you think it's a concern that some people will, you know, without a legal background, start using these tools to generate legal work and try to replace the lawyer with technology in a way that actually is not helpful?
Yeah, I've heard actually people tell me that they've done this. So I remember being at an event and someone said, yeah, I use ChatGPT to draft my employment agreement. And so I think it's the same thing with Google. Like you said, people will go and they'll do it themselves. They're, they're cost sensitive, and so they will do that. There's risks, you know. So we talked about at the beginning about jurisdiction, how I look at the tools and see how well is it doing with respect to Canadian context. And so somebody who uses, for example, ChatGPT, they're not going to have that knowledge or understanding of what is being provided and whether or not that is actually legally accurate, right? ChatGPT has the potential to hallucinate. So it sometimes just makes up stuff. So you really have to verify and make sure that it is accurate.
Are people thinking of these tools as sort of standalone, replace the lawyer type tools, the tech entrepreneurs, I mean, versus the firms themselves, which I think most firms see the combination of technology and lawyer as the right solution, not one replacing the other. Do you find that clients and entrepreneurs are thinking about it as a replacement?
I think there's always this dance that technology, legal technology entrepreneurs do when they're talking about their technology. They're always very careful to say that it's not going to replace lawyers. It's an aid for lawyers doing their work. But there is the potential with some of these, with the direction that we're going with respect to AI, where it's going to decrease the number of lawyers that we're going to need in order to do particular types of work, or it's going to decrease the law clerks or the paralegals that we're going to need. And I think people are cognizant of it, but it's something that's not really spoken about a lot. Yeah, I think that it's not something that you will hear people say, but I think you're right that there's a potential.
Are there any things on the horizon that you're watching for or that you're particularly excited about?
For me, actually, this has been a really interesting journey. When we were first introduced to Harvey back at the end of 2022 and before ChatGPT came out, and we started to get some of the results, like after using it, it was like, wow, this is amazing. And it really just changed. In my mind, it was like a light switch that went off that said, hey, this is something that could really impact how we do legal. And so I'm excited to see where this goes. You know, Microsoft is talking about incorporating GPT into its software. That's going to have a big impact in how we do our work. Just generally, there's lots of potential here.
It seems like a very exciting time to be in a role like yours.
Yes, it is.
Although with new tools coming out every day, it certainly keeps you busy.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Monica. I appreciate you sharing your insights on present and the future of legal tech with our audience today. Yeah.
Thank you, Stuart.
All right. I want to thank my guest on the podcast today, Monica Goyal, the Director of Legal Innovation at Caravel Law. The Business Decisions podcast was created by the team at Caravel Law. And if you're interested in learning more about Caravel Law, please visit us at caravellaw.com. Special thanks to Dwayne Wright for mixing and producing this podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review. And please share the episode with others that you think would also benefit from these conversations. Until our next episode, I hope all of your business decisions are great ones.